Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Harris, your host. I invite fascinating humans from all walks of life to share their wisdom and unpack their mindsets and formulas for growth. Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. I am your host, Sam Harris. Today, I am joined by Jari Bollander, the host of the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast, and he is an author and entrepreneur himself. Have I said your name correctly? Because it was a common thing I do is just get people's name completely wrong.
It's Jari. Yeah, I think you got it right.
Jari. Well, a bit of a face as I said it. I'm like, oh, I'm messing up again.
Well, the best way to remember it is I always say, just imagine a jar full of E's and you will never screw it up. So
I feel like you told me that before. 6 months. I'm like,
apparently it doesn't work all the time. Oh no, I got to rethink my cool little hook. Anyway.
Yeah, it's good. I'll remember it for at least the rest of the conversation.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, that'd be great. Welcome, Jari.
Thank you.
I have really enjoyed listening to your podcast and your general view on entrepreneurship and life. And I think this is interesting stuff to dig into. We mentioned some things already about meditation, psychedelics, life lessons, entrepreneurial journeys, all of which seem like great things to go into. So firstly, what drew you into entrepreneurship?
Well, I grew up in Silicon Valley and I'm still actually in San Francisco. San Francisco proper. And when you grow up in Silicon Valley back in the 70s and 80s, because I'm 50, right? I'm an old guy in this game. But as they say, never trust an old man in a young man's game because we know some things, apparently, because we've survived this long. But yeah, I was going to school down at San Jose State and didn't think much about like entrepreneurship and stuff like that until got to college. And everyone I was going to school with was literally like at a startup. They were like going to school on the side. The school was their side muscle. Everyone was like, yeah, I'm at this startup. And then I'm like, really? Aren't you guys? Huh? Really? So back then, semiconductors was a big deal. I mean, semiconductors is still a big deal, but not as big as it was back then. Back then, people actually invested in hardware companies and semiconductor companies. Nowadays, no one cares. Every VC wants the slick SaaS company that's going to do the one metric that matters and grow at 20% per week, blah, 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 some, buzzword bingo bro app thing that whatever, right? That's what they put their money into. But back then people were doing hard and specifically semiconductors. So like the chips in your phone and your computer, which by the way, right now we have a shortage of. So maybe I can polish my talents back up and go build some more chips, which probably not. But yeah, my first job out of college was at a startup. And I'm like, this is great. Wow. How cool is this? We were doing some really cool stuff. It ended up failing. And then I went to another startup and I'm like, this isn't the right fit for me. And then I went to this big company and I'm like, this is really not a fit for me. I am literally unemployable when it comes to these massive companies. So I'm just going to go back to startups. And last 25, 30 years, that's what I've been doing, trying to find the next big thing or work on the next big thing or talk about entrepreneurship on the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast, which is based on the book I wrote over in, back in 2017, and just enjoy this independent life that completes me. For me, it's ultimately about freedom. I wanted more freedom and this is the only way I could do it and actually probably almost sort of get paid. So
yeah, it does lead to more erratic income amounts, but definitely, I would also describe myself as unemployable by traditional standards. And I kind of also think I just find much more motivating to be working on things as well when you sort of have the flexibility to do the things that you want to do and the rewards based on your input a bit more rather than like just show up and do some stuff that you're very capable of doing each day and get a break the way. Just like, well, I know I can do this and it's already way too boring. Okay. So what have been the main reasons for your failures in entrepreneurship?
Wow. Yeah, there's so many to choose from. I think all entrepreneurs, it's always like failure is always an option, but never the final result. It's sort of like these learning opportunities because most of the gig is literally luck. Do you have the right skills? Are you at the right time in the world? And did you get lucky? And luck, you can generate your own luck. You just have to be out there and like, more shots on goal, more time on target, right? But in terms of failure, it's a very interesting question because a lot of times people stop at the first failure and don't move past the failure or learn from the failure. I practice jujitsu And I've been doing it ever since about 4 or 4.5 years. And we do this drill called a sweep past submit, which is basically we get in some position and then we try to sweep someone, which is flip them over, submit them, or pass their guard or whatever. And our instructor, Tim, always says, he's like, okay, the winner stays in and the learner goes to the back of the line. And he never says that you lost. He just says you're learning, right? So for me, all of these failures have been like these learning experiences. And I think the biggest learning I had from, and I've done this multiple times, so this has like been a theme of multiple failures, was building a technology that didn't solve someone's pressing need. Like I've built so many things where no one cared, or we were too early, or we were a problem, or we were solution looking for a problem. Mm. And it's just like, no one cared. And I think that's the biggest mind shift I've had over the last probably 10, 15 years. It's like, I want to fall in love with the problem and then figure out how to solve it, as opposed to having a solution that's looking for a problem. And the problem, again, with this is, that's hard to do because typically you don't know when you first start. Who knows? It's so complex and such a random thing that you're probably going to fail or get set back 3, 4, 5. I mean, it could be 10 different times. But what I always look for in these sort of what problem am I solving type of thing is, what skills can I learn along the way? So if I go down a rat hole and it doesn't work out, okay, what skills did I learn to apply to the next thing or the next thing? And so this sort of first principles kind of baseline, I don't know what the word would be. I think it's first principles would be the best word, like making sure that those first principles work. Like, do you have unit economics? I've failed on that one multiple times where we're going to make it up in volume. No, we're not going to. Zero times a million is still a zero. No, it's just, you know, bash back in the internet days where people were just like, just build it. We're building the internet. And a lot of companies just crashed and burned because they weren't making money out of it. So that kind of thing where, is this really a business? Is this really a problem that someone wants to solve? And is it one of their top three problems? I remember I built this one thing and it was really cool. And yeah, but this is a problem, but it wasn't priority for them, for the customers. So it didn't go anywhere. Great idea, super, it's a problem, but there was no desire to fix this problem. So is it a top three problem that you're worried about? Or is it the most important problem you're worried about? That's a very common thing where you scratch your own itch, you solve your own problem, and you're like, well, it's a problem for you, but it may not be a problem for other people. And then you have to pivot.
Yeah.
Ooh, and this, you know, I'm sure you've had some experiences with that.
Mm. It kind of can be good to solve a problem for yourself because you really get it. Actually, you can go a bit deeper on it when other people don't quite understand. Come out the other side with something that's awesome. But you can also just do something that no one ever gets. There's always a business. Listen, you kind of only fail when you stop and decide that you failed. And if there's something that's annoying you that you start going up, there's some kind of way to make money. But it's whether after doing the wrong thing enough times, if you then work out what the thing is that is right, that you then want to go and do it, or if you actually have the energy to go and do it, or if you run out of money, or and the other things like falling out with your business partners, etc., or do different things between each other. Lots of ways that things can go wrong.
Yeah. Not picking the right partners. I've done that before.
Yeah.
Boy.
Definitely. Me too.
That's just so painful.
Yeah. It's hard. But
it is.
Also, you spend the entire time complaining about it, but then you're like, it's the only thing I can see myself doing as well. And
well, there's that. The alternative is much worse, right? The alternative is bad corporate coffee and so many meetings that you're like, what's this meeting for again?
This reliable wage thing. Jesus, you want that? God.
I don't need a pay packet. Like, I need my freedom. I swap money for freedom. So I want more freedom. So therefore, my variability on money is going to be a lot greater. And
I've always been
to be okay with that.
Yeah. What's the word, like risk averse? No, not risk averse. The one that's like, what's the really risky thing I can go and do? Okay, that's the riskiest option.
Yeah, I have a bunch of friends that say, that's a horrible idea. Where do I sign up?
That's
the mentality.
Definitely. So what about the successes? What have been like the main successes about things that work?
A lot of it had to do with timing.
Mm.
Being at the right place at the right time with the right skill set. It's just so amazing how random luck plays into it too. So like I said before, you can make your own luck by putting yourself out there, being interviewed on podcasts, putting out your thought process, having people get to know you. And it can be very taxing and trying because you're putting yourself out there, right? Like being out there is scary, especially nowadays, where everyone wants to like cancel you or whatever. But the successes have always been falling out of a failure or something that didn't work, but then having the skills and realizing, oh, wow, this opportunity is something I just have to go try. Like, this is a good opportunity and I need to spend a little time. Not necessarily, I could spend my time on it. I might not get paid for it, but the upside is so asymmetrical that I should try it. And those are the ones where I'm like, gosh, I don't know if I should do it. And I'm just like, yeah, just try it. Why not? And those, when I had that attitude, it just worked. There's a couple of those where I didn't initially want to do it, or I didn't feel I had the right skills, or I was like, gosh, I'm not going to get paid right away. Or I mean, I need to do a little work to get this to the point it needs to be. But those were always the most successful. The ones you think are a slam dunk are never a slam dunk. And the ones you think, oh, that'll never work, like they work. I think it's just this, how much you put into it. But when I was at a company called Ion Torrent was building semiconductor DNA sequencing machines, which at the time people were doing they weren't even doing semiconductor sequencing. They were doing sequencing the old way with assays and all these photoluminescence and these machines that were as big as a couch and stuff. And then Ion Torrent came along and they were building these little DNA sequencing machines that would use semiconductor chips, which is what I knew how to do. But I didn't know anything about DNA sequencing. I didn't know anything about biology, surface chemistry, I'm the semiconductor guy, right? But it was this opportunity where it's just like, this is going to change the world. Like, if you want to do $1,000 genome, which was the goal, the X Prize, right? This is the way to do it, hands down, because it's so efficient, was whatever. Literally signed on, I think 6 months later, we got bought by some massive company. And I'm like, oh, wow, I like, you know, I hit that run right in the perfect spot, right?
Nice.
But then there's other ones that hold on it for years and they go out of business. So.
That's funny. Cool. Yeah. Hopefully more of the join it 6 months later, still for the one projects have to.
Let's hope so. I still got it work. I didn't get rich, but it was a really cool experience. It was just fascinating how it all worked out.
Nice. So of these things, are there any burning things with your life that you haven't done that you wish you had done?
You know, I've been thinking a lot about like regret, you know, like what I should have done, what I could have, should have. A lot of the regret centers around I actually wanted to go in the military. And back when I sort of had the chance to do that when I was younger, I got distracted with my first wife. And then I also went to college and everything. That was basically, I graduated high school 89. I think the first Gulf War was like 90, 91, I think. So it was a little bit weird, like, oh, I may do this or not do this. And everyone thought they were going to get drafted. It's just a weird situation. But that's like the only real regret, that I didn't serve in some sort of capacity, sort of give back. I can still do that. I mean, not in the military, but give back in other ways. But I think that's the one of like, coulda, woulda, shoulda. I think the one that, I mean, I had to learn this one the hard way, was after my wife died, was every day is precious. And don't regret, like, don't think back that I didn't use the days I have in a more productive way. And I always think that was a really valuable lesson, because Jane, my late wife, she has no more days. She pretty much packed it in her life. I mean, she died when she was 36, so still too young, but I just was always amazed by how she always seemed to want to live every day. And don't get me wrong, sometimes you kind of plan a little more ahead. It's not like complete debauchery every day. Woohoo, just going to party. I mean, you learn those with life lessons, and sometimes the life lessons are painful. That life lesson of my spouse dying, I also realized that I shouldn't drink alcohol anymore. It just wasn't doing me any good. So I sort of wish I'd found that sooner. But then again, I can't really beat myself up too much, because a lot of the times the situations we find ourselves in, how we've been conditioned our whole lives, leads us to pick these things. So in terms of free will, depending on if you're a deterministic, you know, or a free will versus non-free will person, you sort of start to realize over time that you're like, you are conditioned to do certain behaviors. So in one sense, you don't have the free will to sort of choose, but you have like this long-term free will to improve. And I just wish I kind of realized this improvement mindset more, like, I wish I would have learned earlier, but I'm glad I learned, right?
Yeah.
But it is pretty fascinating. When I mentor young entrepreneurs, they can listen to Crazy Uncle Jari all day. I can tell them till I'm blue in the face, all the things I screwed up on and all these sort of things. But then there's one point where I'm like, well, you're just going to have to make this mistake so you really learn it. I think not living every day to the best I can. It's one thing I regret I didn't learn soon.
Sure. I like the way you explain that as well as in the free will debate of do you have free will or not, and realizing how much of the free will you take away from yourself just within like the mindsets that you have and your general automated reaction to things is actually really huge when you manage to step out a little bit of your own ego to sort of see these things. And you mentioned about like psychedelics and like I'm doing the 10-day meditation retreat, which is all sort of about stepping out of your normal self to actually sort of go much deeper on how you do react to life as it goes along and what are like the corridors you sort of confine yourself into of thinking that you actually just don't need to do. Ideally be like a kinder, happier person that's generally better at everything.
Besides my podcast, I also run a tech startup, which is one of the most stressful things you can do with yourself. I'm also currently training for ultramarathons, and so I have a pretty great recipe for exhausting myself. However, I've been using the Open app, which is a mindfulness studio with a new way to practice well-being. The meditation, yoga, and breathwork classes help level me out and energize me. The breathwork is just a really nice way to kick off your day, and it's my favorite thing to do after lunch to just combat the energy dip, which I seem to be suffering from until I started using this, and I just work through the afternoons way better, much better than coffee, for example. You can practice with Open Live in group classes or on demand with their library of meditation, breathwork, yoga, and Pilates classes. And I found it the best place to find my Zen, and it's only an affordable $10 a month. However, for listeners of the Growth Mindset podcast, you can get your first month entirely free with the promo code GROWTH. That's GROWTH. So go to their website, open-together.com/growth. 30 days free, or use the link in the show notes.
You said you tried doing like some psychedelics therapy to dealing with the issues with your wife. Like, how did that come about? Was it?
Well, I mean, actually, this is the first time I've actually publicly talked about it.
Not bad.
Super
lazy there.
The growth mindset. Well, no, I think more people need to talk about this sort of thing. So I read the book, How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan. A great book, really great book. I also met some people who had experimented with this from a therapeutic point of view. And of course, I listened to the other little more famous Sam Harris than you.
Who's that guy?
He's everywhere.
He podcasts much, I don't.
So a little more famous than you, but not by much. Not by much.
Yeah.
So what had happened after Jane died, I hit alcohol pretty hard. And traditionally, this has been my coping mechanism, right? I really didn't deal with my feelings, especially of sorrow, grief, and just general anxiety. I'd usually just drink or smoke pot or whatever, right? During when Jane was sick, and her name was Jane. When Jane was sick, I would routinely vape CBD to sleep because it just could not, like you can imagine, right? It's an entire crazy thing. In fact, I'm writing a memoir about the whole thing, which I'm pitching soon to publishers and stuff because it was this transformational part of my life. And wow, like, I got to write this down, or I'm going to forget it. Well, I don't normally forget it, but I need to process it so that it becomes less scary. Because how memory works, and especially in trauma and grief, there's a certain point where you can talk about it, or more importantly, during the acute phases of it, when you talk about it, you relive it. Like you feel everything you felt, and it's awful because you just keep on putting all this cortisol. Your body just completely gets whacked out. But you have to learn, and through therapy and other things, to bring these things up so that you can integrate them. And then as what happens with memory is it every time you kind of remember it, it gets a little less scary. It actually processes in a weird way. You don't remember it verbatim. You remember the last time you remembered it, which is so bizarre. I never knew this about memory and stuff. Anyway, as an aside. So Jane died. I was dealing with it very well. The beautiful thing about that is I met a wonderful woman who's now my fiance. Her name's Minerva. She's just such a beautiful person. And she's actually has a lot of experience with trauma and all these sort of things. And so she got me interested in all these, like how your body deals with stress and strain and trauma and grief. And I was just really thinking like, God, this really makes sense. I feel this. When I think about when Jane died, like I feel it, I physically feel it. Like before I get sat, right? And I just wasn't doing very well with this at all. Like, I was coping poorly. I had, you know, I then found out I had sleep apnea, which I wasn't sleeping well, which sleep is like one of the most important things that you can have and do. Alcohol interrupts that. All these things were just really conspired against. Then you add the mix of grief and sorrow, and I would say acute depression. I think I was even diagnosed with some mild acute depression, or mild depression as they called it. I mean, of course you're going to be depressed. Your wife just died. Of course, this is a very traumatic thing. I just was going through this really tough time, and I got to the point where there were some really bad things that were happening to me and with Minerva. And I just was like, God, this isn't working. I need to do something. So the first thing I did was I stopped drinking. Pretty much cold turkey. Actually, it was cold turkey. I remember the day. It was like May 15th, 2018. It said, no more. Minerva helped me a lot with that. She's like, look, this isn't helping you. Your moods are swinging. You can't sleep. You're doing all these weird things when you're asleep. I was sleepwalking and doing all this, like, even sometimes violently doing stuff. It's just really poor, like, not good, right? So I stopped. And about this time, you know, started thinking about, well, how can I get better, right? And I've been taking therapy, talk therapy, for ever since, literally 2 days after Jane died, I started talk therapy again. And it was good. And it was really good to talk about your feelings and hold space. And all of us were bingo stuff that therapists do. It's just like a really great thing. And, you know, as I started to work through all these things, it really became sort of challenging to, like, get to the next level. Like, I would get stuck and I'd integrate for a while and work on it. And I see these little steps and I'm like, what is it that's blocking me from this? And it turns out that a lot of our attitudes about the world are, like, come from, you know, our family of origin and how we grew up and this conditioning that we had as kids. We were, like, lower middle class. And my parents are still married. They're good people, but it was like, I'm a Gen Xer. So I grew up as a latchkey kid. Support is not really in our vocabulary, right? Like, the cavalry was never going to come for us. I mean, we were like free range kids before free range kids were cool. We would just stay out and the street lights went on, come back home and eat your Swanson TV dinner and watch the TV, like Hogan's Heroes or whatever, right? But this really changed my mindset. This is a very important piece of who I am. And it was really running into, like, gosh, how am I going to get past some of these blocks? Some of these, what I call grooves, like, these are these really deep grooves. I cannot get out of the groove. And then I started, again, had some friends that were doing psychedelics, and they're like, well, if you read some of this stuff, what usually happens with the psychedelic therapy is, one, of course, you have to have the therapy ahead of time and you, like, build up to it. But when you do the experience, what happens is you smooth these grooves over. You sort of jump to the next plane. It's like a step function, or even more, a huge step function. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm sort of at a kind of a crossroads. The talk therapy is going well, but I can't, like, get to the next level. I need something to push me, right? And so then I did my first psychedelic experience. That's part of a therapy. And it launched me to the next stage, so to speak. And it's just funny because I was really afraid, nervous, you know, it's a drug. I did a lot of research. It's not for everyone. But I was reading all the MAPS data. I was reading all this stuff out of, like, John Hopkins and Mayo Clinic. They were doing all these really great research on how this helps with end of life and how this helps with therapy, especially for PTSD and, like, all these things. And I'm just like, well, maybe I should try being a psychonaut for a see
how that goes. Good for you.
You know?
And especially, like, maybe older, this is, like, it's a thing people do when, like, they're young, just for fun anyway. But thinking about it, like, yeah, from that standpoint, good.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I never did whatever do this for fun, because there's some points of it. It's not fun. Like,
yeah,
it will tell you when you're ready and it will tell you if you're doing something you shouldn't do. That's what bad trips are about. This is the one thing where it's like, this is going to make sure you're doing this for the right reasons, because if you're not, this is going to be horrible. You're going to learn something, but you're not going to have a fun time, right? So. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was an interesting kind of pick at it, you know? So yeah, it was transformational, but then it's not the panacea though. So now after that, I continue to do the talk therapy and, like, work through what it taught me. And I think that's the most important thing, is like continue to take the lessons and then work on the lessons. Like, it's profound, but it's not the silver bullet. You have to take the lessons it teaches you and then work on them diligently. So regret is one of those ones I'm trying to work on. So,
yeah, I was going to say, like, did you kind of feel that there was a moment when you said, like, oh, I get it. Like, this is what's holding me back and like the way I should be differently.
Yeah. A lot of it had to do with the trauma and the grief over Jane dying. Part of it was getting permission to love again. Jane and I had talked about this. She's like, look, if I don't make it, I don't want you to be sad. I want you to go find love again. And I'm like, I don't want to even hear you say that you're not going to die. This was 4 months before she died, 3 months before she died. I'm like, that's not going to happen. Just stop with the negativity. Get out of the private pity party that you're going to be okay, right? And it was denial, because at that point, it was going to be really tough to cure. And I felt guilty. I actually felt guilty about being with my now fiance. Like, what gave me the right to be happy? I'm here, right? Like, you're not. And now I found someone, found her relatively quick, and I'm blessed to have, I mean, whatever you want to call it. Like, I got lucky. Like, I got really lucky. And I felt a lot of guilt over that. And a lot of it was just reconciling that, look, the people that love you want you to be happy. And this is for anything. You don't have to like lose a spouse to learn the lesson. The lesson is, people that care about you want to see you successful and happy. They may disagree with how you do it. They may not be ready for what your life path is. They may think that you're nutty. They may think, how the hell do you make a living? This entrepreneur thing. I don't want you to come back home and live at home. Like, silly stuff like that. But generally, people that care about you want you to be happy. That's what they want. And that's what Jane wanted too. So I had to come with terms with this whole, like, it's okay to be happy. Because there were times during, after she died, where I wanted to walk in front of a bus because I was so sad. I didn't feel anything. It was just a void. This is like deep void. And what the therapy and the journey taught me was, it was, look, it's okay to want to love again. It's okay to want to be happy. You don't have to be miserable. You have to recognize that what you went through is horrible. Like, anyone that's lost, anyone whose partner has died, or anyone that's been close to someone that's died, it's a horrible experience. It's catastrophic. It's going to change your life. You'll never get over it. You may pass through it. You may integrate it, but it's something that's always with you. And you can either use that to grow, or it's either post-traumatic growth or post-traumatic decline. And that's the choice you have to make. Because one of the things that a lot of people say is, and I couldn't even entertain this question or ask this question or even give an answer to this question until about 6 months ago. And someone said, what good came out of Jane dying? And I'm like, good? What good could come out of someone that was 36-year-old? No good. It's bullshit. Come on. Good? What are you, nutty? But then you think about it and you just, like, you reflect. Because see, the thing that gets the emotion going is the fact that something good came out of something horrible. Because the something horrible happened. Like, it's done. That happened. Question is, what good came out of it? And that took me a long time to figure out. It took me a long time to even admit nothing good came out of it. But that's not true, because something good did come out of it. I quit drinking. I live every day. I enjoy the day. I found love again. I'm on your podcast. You know what I mean? Like, but that's the shift, right? And again, it's taken a long time to do that. And of course, I would give anything to have her back. Right? But that's not going to happen. And I know she wanted me to be happy. And the people around me want me to be happy and healthy. And honestly, I want to live my life that she would be proud of. Right?
Yes.
Which, like, is another
GT in that sense of, like, if you have a life, you may as well, like, go and have the best life you can.
Sort of. Yeah. What a waste if you don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know she wouldn't want that. I mean, she even said one time, she's just like, I know you're going to be sad about this and you're going to be in your own little thing and you're going to do all the stupid stuff you do to cope, and I don't want you to be sad. And I'm like, look, you die, I'm going to be sad. I don't care what you say. Like, you can't control me. You can't tell me what to do. Like, right? I mean, that's what the memoir is about, the one I'm writing, the one I'm trying to pitch to publishers. It's that dynamic. Like, huh? What? No, you know, like those conversations that are hard conversations to have. But when you go through that, you just realize, you're just like, gosh, the world is really, you know, the little trivial like stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Enjoy the day.
Exactly.
As best you can. Live a life that completes you if you can. And take those setbacks in stride, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need to beat yourself up so much. Or certainly right. Get pissed off at other people for things when you're like, nothing really matters that much. They really haven't ruined your life just by being annoyed at you for something or doing something wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can go through life much more easily found when you realize you need to sort of beat yourself up about these things. So.
Hard to do. Yeah. I still have a hard time with this. Don't get me wrong. I'm not some, I have not figured it all out, but every time I just try to think back to that.
Yep. Just another step on the path to enlightenment, which is a ridiculously long journey, it turns out. But
it definitely indeed.
Gonna work on it. Nice. But yeah, I'm super looking forward to my Vipassana retreat to hopefully take another step towards the enlightenment pathway. So the last one I did was great. I certainly got way better at not being stressed about, or not being angry about things going wrong. And again, sort of feeling like, okay, something's gone wrong, something will come good of it. Or the least that's good is that I didn't get pissed off and I still have the rest of my day to carry on enjoying as I would have done anyway, without being someone who's pissed off, which is great. But I'm sure there's plenty more things to learn because I definitely get stressed about plenty of other stuff. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Be nice to have less stress and generally somehow swim through life as if it was just like nice and perfect for me. And just being able to like recognize more of the good things that happen, the amount of luck that happens. Cause like, I mean, I've been running my business for like a year and a half and it's kind of like constant stress and everything's going wrong. It sort of seems like, and you can kind of talk about it in the framing of like, oh, like I've had different CTOs sort of come and go and leave me. My last business partner that kind of failed and went badly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So many investors that have just been like, what the fuck are you doing? You're an idiot. And we have 8 employees. We now got like 3 because of having the funding and stuff. And yeah, seems like each month there's like some other targets that we haven't hit and we're behind on something. And you're like, oh God, I'm spending so much time doing this thing. And like, why am I wasting my time? I could actually have a job where I would have earned like how much money in the past year and a half that I've just like haven't had. But on the other side, it's like, okay, somehow I got into Techstars and just about sort of managed to fund the business and sort of start doing this project thing that I wanted to do. And then have managed to find the CTO that I had got, which came from like a random posting on Indie Hackers that I almost didn't bother doing. And then turned out like the perfect business partner for me. And it's great. And yeah, we raised like 30K off like a friend who had been running a podcast with, who was like our first angel investor. We didn't manage to raise any money after that for quite a long time. And we actually dug into the money that he'd given us. And like, if he hadn't have invested when he did, like we would have failed. So we're still alive just because of my mate. And then when I was kind of ready to give up again a bit more, like over summer, we were like randomly, this one guy that I'd met sort of sent our pitch deck out to like a bunch of investors, one of whom did actually find it interesting and then invested. And it's now like advising us and has lots of connections and other stuff. And it's like so much around like very small lucky things that happen to just mean that we're still alive and still going. And it feels like we've actually worked out how we should be doing and have like a really good idea of growth and stuff. And you're like, so many good things have happened in this process and I've learned so much and met so many amazing people that it's all been like also really good. And you can like paint it in both ways. And
yeah,
if life's a story that you tell yourself, why not tell yourself the more fun story that's great? And I've got to show up every day and have fun and do stuff I wanted to do. So yeah, I was choosing to do it. Surely I wanted to do it, right?
Okay. Yeah, you do choose what you want to do. So if you're not determinist or a free will person or non-free will person, but you know what I mean, it's a sometimes can be a hard choice, but over time
definitely yes. So we'll see what else there is to learn about life and entrepreneurship. So do you think you're going to take any other any more psychotherapies for just sort of seeing what other levels you can go to, or do you feel like you've hit it with the psychedelics and stuff?
No, I think I'm gonna tell you the journey.
Did you do it with like some people do it with an actual guide, or did you kind of just sort of take some? Because I kind of like sometimes taking not lots of acid and just going for long walks and stuff, and it's great. Can't do it too often because of I just have too many existential life ideas, but once or twice a year I think is like healthy in some ways to just sort of like step back from your day-to-day stuff and think bigger picture.
Yeah, I know I have a guide. I think it's important to have the set and setting right. And have the intent. I think about once a year is probably a good cadence. Some people do more depending on their trauma, but there's so many, I mean, that one day has got so many life experiences wrapped up to it. It takes an entire year just to figure out what it means. It's just transformative in so many ways. So yeah, I think there's a lot of indigenous cultures that do their ayahuasca ceremony once a year and stuff.
Pretty like well that. Do that.
Yeah, that sounds like a little bit nutty. The one that I do is psilocybin. I think that's the, the one that seems to be the most, that I tolerate the best.
Yeah.
It just seems like there's more of a deterministic time frame. I mean, you read Michael Pollan's book and you'll kind of understand how this all works. But I mean, even if it's like what you're doing coming up, this 10-day meditation retreat, it's the pause on life. It's the kind of reset.
Yeah.
Kind of go outside yourself, right? To be like, what the heck's going on? And while you don't have to do this major, like, transformative thing, I think, like, to your point, even walking around, like you said, hey, I take some acid and walk around a couple times a year. Well, just walking around in nature as a brief pause to the day. I mean, I love nothing more than to walk around my neighborhood with nothing, just like absorb, kind of get my mind right. I mean, there's just so many great ideas I've had, so many insights. I've had just walking around, not even on anything. Well, maybe caffeine, but I think it's the pause. It's the pause life to reflect on it so you can look in on it as opposed to always absorb constantly like, oh, email, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like pause, reflect. And for me, I mean, even working out, you know, people that work out a lot, I think, of course, the physicality of it's great, but I also think the mental break is pretty great too. It's like, gosh, that was a great idea, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I did a TEDx speech on exactly that philosophy around these days, just the amount of stuff coming at you if you're just constantly plugged into like a podcast every single moment that you're not like on your email or doing other work, and like you're just constantly having distractions or other people's conversations and thoughts going into your head when you're ever having any time for your own thoughts and reflecting on stuff. And like you need it. That's where all the ideas happen. That's where like you make cross-pollinate all of the cool stuff that's coming into you.
I wish that's the other regret. I wish I would have paused more and enjoyed some of the stuff. Just happy to be alive. Gosh, I go walk outside and go to the local cafe or go to a park. I'm so glad you brought that up. Like to pause, like such a great, more people should pause.
Yeah, big time. Cool. I think those are the main things I wanted to cover in the podcast. Anything you want to ask me?
We had talked a little bit about it before, about this retreat that you're going on, which you've done before, which I find fascinating because I've always thought about doing these long, you know, 10-day meditation retreats, right?
Let's do it. Do it.
Yeah.
Just talking about how much important it is to have a pause, right?
Right. I know. And that's hard, even hard for me to, really 10 days, that's a long time. But I mean, I'm just curious how that came about and what should people know about it? I mean, just generally, just because I think when you've experienced something, it's always great to share.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe to inspire someone, you know.
Definitely. It was something that I found very hard to understand why you do it before I did it. And I heard about it whilst I was traveling around Asia for a year, which is when I started my podcast. And I got like cool people on my podcast, like famous entrepreneurs and things. And then also just the odd random person I found super interesting. And so there was these three people that I'd met whilst I was traveling who I spent a good amount of time with. And I just sort of found them endlessly interesting and like awesome people that I kind of wanted to be like. And the first one had done a Vipassana, and I was like, wow, that's nuts. Who would want to spend 10 days in like a monastery or something doing absolutely fuck all? And that sounds horrible. I'm a busy person. I need to do lots of stuff. And then like the second person that I spoke to had also done one. And he was like awesome. I spent a lot of time with him, and he was like one of the kindest people I'd ever met in my life. He just never got stressed about things. At one point, he had his new kitchen, and we somehow managed to completely fuck it up. Like there was like this hob thing that was like, shit just went everywhere and burnt stuff to crap. And we got back late at night, having discovered we'd messed up his kitchen. And he literally was like, "Oh, that's fine. I'm just gonna go to bed. See you guys tomorrow." And we're like, "We've just destroyed your new kitchen. Are you not going to be slightly angry?" And he just went to bed, had a great night's sleep. He had like some stuff early in the morning, some business meetings. He went and killed them. By the time he came back that afternoon, we cleaned up his kitchen. We bought him some presents to say sorry. And then I met like this third guy who was also one of the coolest people I'd met. And he'd done one as well. And by that point, I was like, what the shit is going on with this Vipassana thing, right? These people all seem to like, they can't explain it to me in a way that makes me want to do it. Apart from the fact that they seem really cool. And I guess it's just something that seems like a challenge. And I'm just super curious. And I was like, well, I've no idea what it's actually going to be like to spend 10 days with nothing but like sitting very still in my own brain. I guess I'll just do it. It's 10 days. I spent a whole year traveling. I can spend 10 days just doing this for curiosity. My whole year of traveling is curiosity, I guess. So I'll try it. The first few days were awful because I was just really shit at meditating. I didn't seem to get anything done other than sit there being crap at meditating and was like, I could be like working. I'm completely off record. No one's going to be emailing me or calling me. I could just do so much stuff. But I was like, well, I almost quit. But then I came to terms with it. It was like, I'm just going to book myself 10 days with no calls or emails. If I so much want this 10-day freedom, I can just do that some other time and I'll still have this 10-day Vipassana experience and see what happens. And then after that, it started getting super awesome because the reason you're so bad at meditating initially is because you've got so much stuff that you're reacting to going on in your brain permanently, and just all the day-to-day shit, this is just constantly keeping your attention. It's just sort of whirring through and you're constantly trying to process it and you just can't keep up. But like after 3 or 4 days of nothing but just sitting there to process it, it's kind of, it all suddenly starts to go and you get to step back from like your day-to-day life and actually really calm down and think about who you are and how you're going through life and why you react to the things that you react to in the way that you do, and kind of just laugh at who you think you are and why you take yourself seriously or why these things that might ever annoy you and stuff, and then really come to terms with how to be a more normal person. And like I said, my friend that didn't give a shit about us like ruining his kitchen, instead of me thinking he was dumb, I was like, holy shit, Bob is a freaking genius. How did he just like not spend all night being angry at us, not fall out with us, not like ruin what was a good relationship, and actually just have a great night's sleep, which I would have lost, and had a great day killing it in the office and have some presents and have a better relationship with us afterwards? He went through a terrible situation, but it was better. Whereas I would have gone through that and I would have had a terrible time. And it's like, yeah. Oh my God, that's like next level geniusness that he's done. Why don't I do that when people mess things up for me? So when stuff gets messed up for me, I'm like, amazing, you've just crashed into my car. Awesome, let's be mates kind of thing. And it's like, okay, I can do this. Like there's nothing stopping me. It's just how I choose to show up and react to things. And it's totally possible, you can do it. So it just took a long time of sitting very still with nothing but my mind to actually kind of work through those things. And hopefully something big and revelatory happens again next time.
That's pretty cool.
Thanks.
I think we could all use some of that. A little more calm. Mm. Okay, now you've piqued my interest. Now I got to figure out how to do this at one point.
Yeah, you do.
It sounds really cool.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to it. If you're kind of open to it, it's kind of amazing and life-changing. But if you expect too much from it, I guess it's bad. And if you're kind of just expecting things to be bad, then it'll just be bad because you'd be there and it's like, this is awful. But as long as you go for it, like curiosity and stuff, then I think it's good.
Yeah, I think that curiosity is super important.
Mm.
Good point. Be curious. I think the other life lesson out of this whole discussion.
Yeah.
Curiosity is a good thing to have.
Definitely. Sweet. Okay. Well, glad you asked that. I'm excited now.
Yeah, no, great. No, it was great. Great to chat. Good luck on the retreat. Let me know how it goes. Awesome. Just really enjoyed the conversation. And even though it was a little tense to get going, right? Well, with it, it became the beautiful thing that it is. So
yeah, big time. Well, thanks so much for sharing all of your life lessons. So
of course.
Sounds like you've had an interesting life. Good moments, hard moments. It's good to see everything from different angles. Awesome. And yeah, I'll let you know how things go and hopefully send you some useful materials if you want to look into it and things as well, I guess.
Definitely do. Cool.
Cool. So The Entrepreneur Ethos is your podcast. Is there anywhere we can like follow you on social and that kind of thing?
Yeah, on Twitter at The Daily MBA. And then on LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn. It's pretty easy to find me. But theentrepreneurethos.com is where I put all the podcasts. So yeah, just check that out. It'll have all the ways to get a hold of me. And yeah, hopefully you'll enjoy what we talked about and check out the podcast and continue your journey of curiosity.
Sweet. Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you head on to another episode, what's your biggest aha moment from today's discussion? you can share with us your insights and join us on Reason FM. Reason FM is a social podcasting app and the best way to discover new podcasts, connect with hosts and other listeners. Also, don't forget to tune into the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast with me and my co-host Nico, and we expose you to a different perspective and dive into the world's most thought-provoking and inspiring books. That's all for this episode, and with that, keep learning and keep growing.